Okay, this is the title of my presentation. It's a solar recorder, its origins, concept, potential application for crop production. Now, the solar recorder recognizes that the modern best management practices deployed in corn production limit the amount of incident sunlight that hits all of the chloroplasts in the corn plant. Now, that isn't very revolutionary that that's a fact, but that is a fact, and that is the origin. That is the origin. The first part of that title is that I wonder what would happen if we could have a more complete interface between the chloroplast and the corn plant and the catalyst for photosynthesis of sunlight. So, in consideration of the fact that the bulk of yield is sourced in photosynthate-based carbon compounds, considerations leading to the concept pose the following basic question: what could we produce if we could get incident sunlight to all of the still potentially active leaves in the corn plant? Now that gets into the concept of the title slide. And that is the question that we've been trying to answer. Just what could we produce if all the mature chloroplasts in the bottom two-thirds of that corn canopy could have access to incident sunlight? Now, we've had a simple paradigm shift that's been achieved to serve as a treatment protocol to test the hypotheses versus the current best management practices or the control. The data from, well, I call myself the first investigator, but the data from the first investigator's work indicate that the solar recorder concept with site and variety-specific supporting practices does increase yield beyond what those with conventional wisdom might anticipate, or that anyone with common sense might anticipate, while offering soil quality, holistic, and sustainable opportunities. So that, then, the results we had that I'm going to show, and I hope can be supported by peer review studies, is why I thought that the potential application, the potential is there. If the data I'm going to present can be repeated by other workers, by other researchers that follow, and so with that, I'm going to get to the slides. Now, can I just take this?
Give it a shot.
Okay. Here. Let's see how this slide works. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So, this is the simple paradigm. We started the simple paradigm, we just removed every other corn row. And if you remove every other corn row, you can get incident light to all the leaves on the corn plant pretty well if you have at least 50 to 60 inches between those corn rows. And now, and the title, it said application, potential application in crop production. Well, our rows are exactly the rows we've used in our studies, and our studies have been exactly twice the width of the conventional equipment that the site cooperator has. So that's why we have 30-inch rows or 36-inch rows is our controls, because those are the row widths that our site cooperators had. And so that's the practical part of it is at least designed to fit equipment that large scale operators have as far as on the corn side of it. Now let's see
down arrow.
The down arrow, okay. So that should be pretty straightforward. Oh, but I think this is twin rows here, and then before long we got into the fact that it said, well, those rows actually should be twin rows instead of single rows, and that's not too hard to do to make twin rows. The site cooperatives I was working with had figured out a way that with certain planters, it's easy to slide the rows over on twin bar planters so that we could plant all the corn rows, only plant two of them and within 7.5 inches of each other. And so those, that's, so it has evolved at that point from a single row that's missing into a twin row on every 60-inch centers or 72-inch centers. Oh no, okay, it went twice. I'm not very good at these things, as you, it's obvious, you can tell that I'm not very good at some of these things, especially at communicating, but here is, now this is what it has evolved into, and this was the protocol that we proposed at the 07 annual meetings, and the protocol is, as I would hope it could work something like this, is have the twin rows of corn, and if we have 60 inch, this model here is for 60 inch rows, and incidentally, if I don't get through and don't get the conclusion finished, get everything finished the way we should in 25 minutes. This is the protocol that I wish that someone with more resources than I have or other scientists could run to see if they could duplicate the results we will show here, we will see here on the screen here someday. Now, but this is fairly obvious, is that we enable a biocapture of more CO2 for biosynthesis into more photosynthate-derived carbon compounds. And there's certainly nothing wrong with having another crop growing there when the corn isn't growing. And winter wheat, in our country, winter wheat just happens to be ready to harvest before the corn plant really canopies the whole 60-inch swath. So then I would like to put seed some clover or some seedling clover in the wheat, because we find that every crop in that system is helped by extra sunlight. The corn crop, all the leaves get sunlight all year, and we know the wheat isn't shaded. The flag leaves of the wheat have access to more sunlight. And then the clover inside the wheat, we actually can produce clover in our country, where usually if we just sow clover in wheat, the clover doesn't make it because they have these high wheat yields and the light doesn't get to it. But the clover does, at least the clover will have a crop later, but nothing like what this is, what this can be. So this is the protocol that I wish someone could study, could look at, and we all know this review of the photosynthesis. You know, that I believe that sunlight, I mean, I learned it very early in life that sunlight was kind of important, and then I learned that that is actually the catalyst that drives the chloroplast to capture the CO2, and that should begin the photosynthetic process. If you have a source of CO2 that we should have around each of those leaves from external, and if you have a source of water inside the plant, we should have what we need there to produce carbohydrates. And this just a little diagram, of course, the simple sugars we produce, and then the complex sugars, now that we're getting there, you know, they range anywhere from amylopectin starch to, now with the cellulosic ethanol, I guess, into hemicellulose compounds. We just think that there is a potential for this system to be looked at more thoroughly than what I have done as one investigator. Now, and Loomis and Williams said that 90% of the plant productivity is sourced in photosynthesis. Now, I don't know that, but I think that it's very extremely important in crop production. And the solar corridor production, and if it is, that's great, because the solar corridor production system is designed to nurture that process and to accelerate that process. And then we think that to the extent that photosynthetic source is sufficient, Then the genetically coded enzymes drive subsequent plant growth. And our data does indicate that the genetics have quite an influence on how well this concept works. And then the rate, the yield, it surely is a function of rate times duration of that rate, but it's governed by the law of the minimum and by the value of by the fact that the value of input A is a function of the support given by inputs B through Z. And if this system does become applied, it will indeed be a new paradigm, I would say. And I do believe we'll be able to capture more CO2 and produce more photosynthates. It enables the highest capacity reproductive sinks to access more photosynthates. Now, this is what our first data got into that we're going to show is, pay attention to that, is that the corn hybrid really has a profound effect on this in our data. And then, of course, I will not show any data except yield. All I've got is yield data. But I've been out in the field and seen that the vegetative sinks access more carbohydrates also. But hopefully someone will take that data and see if that's borne out. And it certainly is cultivar and variety selection is site specific, and then production input then become variety specific after we select the hybrid that we're putting in the field. Now, so finally we're getting to the treatments and to the data that I've got. We've got. We have 12 production environments. Those environments came from. I went to a group of farmers and said, I need about 6 of you that would be willing to host the randomized replicated corn plots on your farm. These were large farm operators. They said, how big will the plots be? And I said, well, we'll probably have about 30-foot row swaths and or 30-foot treatments. And I said, we'll replicate them. I said, well, we'll probably replicate them 4 times or at least three times. And then we're going to split those by hybrid. We're going to split the hybrids by population. And so that's how we got our 12 production environments. And I said, I'd like to have, it would be good if each of you would be in a different soil type, from a different soil type. And I was working in eastern Illinois, Champaign, McLean, Ford, and Iroquois County, Illinois, around 40 to, they were all within 40 to 41 degrees north latitude. And we came up with some pretty good different environments that these studies were in. And we put in 4 hybrids. We split the treatments by hybrids. We had 4 plant populations. We only had 3 replications. And we randomized block split plot design and 2 row width entries. If we had 30-inch equipment, we had 76-inch centimeter equipment. We had our control were 76-centimeter rows, and if we had 36-inch rows, our controls were 91-centimeter centers, and then the treatment was twin rows on every other one of those rows. That was what our treatment was. And can you imagine those farmers? They wondered how they were going to plant double rows, and that was kind of a problem. Kelly Nelson probably knows what that is. That is a little harder to do than just planting a single row, but I wanted those double rows to be within 6 to 8 inches of each other. Because one of the site cooperators had a twin row, Kinsey twin row 7.5-inch planter, and so I wanted to be able to use all the sites, and if one of them had a 7.5-inch row, I wanted the others to be pretty close to that also. And so that's, and all of our treatments were north-south rows, And I don't know that much about climate and sunlight things, except that I know that the latitude makes a difference on the sun angle. And I know the direction that the cornrows has a difference on the sun row. But anyway, so we kept them all the same direction so that we could maybe look at all of our sites together. And that's kind of what the data is going to come from that kind of design. But when we got down his three replications, I did go to another source to see if we could get by with only three replications, and we have decided that that's what we did, just three replications. So now we'll take a look. Show you. Oh, and the four hybrids we used. We spent years figuring out what hybrids to use. We screened a couple hundred hybrids, and the screening system was a very simple screening system. I simply went out in the field and chopped down every other cornrow for 25 feet, and we harvested the center 21 feet of that was our treatment that had a solar corridor on each side of the treatment on each side of the row, and then we took the control out of the same row. Out of the same row, had the same planter. The same row, and where we had, if we had 25 plants in the treatment, or however many plants we had in the treatment, we would go down the row until we got with our chain to where we had exactly the same number of plants in that chain, that 25 foot chain or 21 foot chain. And so we do think that those were our screening trials were pretty nearly identical. The treatment and the control were fairly identical. I've never presented that data because it wasn't scientific. But then we took any of the hybrids that produced 85% of the yield of the control, 85% of the yield on half the plants. We thought those hybrids would be suitable for further consideration, for further studies. And of the 179 hybrids that did not respond to this treatment system, that really didn't match the yield as they would have in the control, we took one of those hybrids and used it. It's designated as hybrid A. Hybrid B, C, and D come from those hybrids that did show a response in the preliminary trials. They did have a lot of ear flex in the preliminary trials. And B and C were very similar, gave very similar response to about 19 of those hybrids that responded, but D gave a response unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, it was a totally different hybrid. And one thing I do know is that after working with those hybrids many years as I did, one hazard we have, I think, of selecting hybrids that we don't know the genotypes of is that sometimes we could get hybrids that are identical or nearly the same. But I'll tell you for sure, those four hybrids were totally different hybrids, and they were different genotypes. Now here's here's the results we started to get is that hybrid A in our studies certainly didn't like the solar corridor treatment. Hybrid B, C, and D did. That's the thing that study shows, and our yield levels there were 180 to 200 bushel. I don't know the metric system very well, but that's what those yields were. But that was over all of our environments and over all plant populations. Now, when we had four plant populations, you know, some of those populations were not optimum population. And all the environments were not that good Illinois farmland. They were not all optimum environments. And I do know that yield level makes a difference in what kind of results you get relative to each other. So our next slide is where I selected the highest yielding environments, highest yielding soil environments, and we had the same pattern as there. Hybrid A does not like the solar corridor treatment. Hybrid B, C, and D do. Now, we could spend more time on those, but that's how they turned out. Wait a minute, I pushed the wrong button. This is kind of a nice gadget. You can go forward or reverse, both ways. That's the way the car is. And so then I said that three of the populations obviously were suboptimum populations. I said, what would the yield be if we took out just the highest yielding populations? And then the pattern was the same. It just at a higher yield level now, every hybrid there was at 200 to 220 bushel by the American system of measurement. So I think that this is worth exploring further from what I've seen here. So now then, there's this is one of the problems with their populations we had, is that two of the population were very low population, but I used the 1/2 X population because that is the population that the preliminary screening trials were in fact developed. They were selected from at that population. So that's the reason we had a 1/2 X population. And this is the response curve, this is the response trend of population as you would expect. The higher population, of course, yielded more than the lower populations. And that's why the last slide showed a higher yield level. It's simply we were using the population that was best for the treatment. But that's the trend that you get that hybrids A, B, and C gave to population. Now I didn't include hybrid D. Okay, correct it. I used one hybrid there because hybrid B was representative of hybrids A, B, and C and how it responded to population, which is pretty much the way most hybrids do respond to population. But the next slide is how hybrid D responded to population, and it really didn't make any difference what the population was. It produced about 200 bushel corn in the solar quarter at 15,000 plants or 30,000 plants. In the treatment. And this hybrid was a terrible commercial hybrid, because whenever it put on good ears, it would lodge. It just go flat. It would lodge. And that's one that we got our first clue that certainly it isn't the reproductive sink that captures all the extra photosynthates. You know, the vegetative portion is gets some of it also. And then one time in Marion County, Missouri, we had one of those preliminary screening trials, had a terrible corn storm, a terrible windstorm blew everything down in the field, except two of the hybrids in the solar corridor treatments, in the treatment. So there is extra carbohydrate surely produced. And then we're going to have one speaker, I think, is that we're going to have maybe has been able to measure if in fact we might be doing something different for the carbon sequestration if we can get more CO2 put into the ground with this system. Now, one of the flaws in comparing those treatments, the different sites to each other, is that some of them were 30-inch rows, some were 36-inch rows. But I threw them all together. To get the 12 environments, I did throw them all together. But this, the reason I threw them all together is that the fact is there really wasn't much difference. There wasn't any difference. So, of course, we weren't in the position to measure that, to compare them. But we had about the same results in our site that was 36-inch rows as we did in our site was 30-inch rows. Now, one of the reasons we went from single rows to twin rows was we only had one hybrid in our study that couldn't make it at all in single rows, and that was hybrid D. As you see, all hybrids except hybrid D, the yield took a terrible yield hit to the solar corridor treatment. But the hybrid D, it could actually do this in single rows. If someone asked me, could use, do you have to use double rows? Well, I'll say, well, no, you probably don't have to if you have a hybrid that can, like hybrid D, but unfortunately, hybrid D doesn't exist anymore. Now, these studies were started quite a long time ago, and all of my work was done on the old hybrids before the stacked hybrids came along. So I'm hoping that one of the speakers will be speaking on his results maybe with some the more modern hybrids. One more minute? Okay, let's see. Okay, one more minute. Okay, I'll quickly go through these, and then that's one reason we have a good panel later. Okay. We can produce other specifically chosen crops between the twin corn rows without a reduction in corn yield. I mean, that's what if you have... And soybeans is the first crop we work with are not a good crop for that. Soybeans do impact corn yields. And our mandate was to make sure any crop we had in between the corn rows did not impact corn yield. Winter wheat is viable, attention, if we don't have any more than 3 10-inch rows or less 30-inch swath. And therefore, if that's the case, maybe could one half of the solar quarter acre be assigned to corn, the other half to wheat. And I'm sorry I've run short of time. In our corn, in our field, instead of having one field of corn, one field of wheat and clover, here we have the field that goes corn, all the way across the field. And we do produce twice as much corn. All the data we had there was on corn, just the corn yield across the crop acre, without anything being account made in between the corn rows. So that's just a question that we come up in the panel, I'd say, and I'm sorry I didn't have time to discuss that a little more, but this is the thing I hope this symposium would have, is that could someone else see if this actually works? So, thank you. Thank you. Sorry it took me so long.
Thank you.